First, the return of Document, Radio 4's investigative history series. And this week, Mike Thompson's paper chase through formerly classified files leads him to a series of revelations about British wartime intelligence. The programme includes some reconstructions of public speeches and parliamentary proceedings.
The Royal Institution in central London, the highly respected home of learned scientific research. On the 26th of February 1960, a controversial lecture was delivered from this building. It was given by Alexander Kennedy, Professor of Psychological Medicine at the University of Edinburgh, and initially sounded innocent enough. Entitled The Scientific Lessons of Interrogation, the lecture's stated aim was to apply the lessons of wartime interrogation techniques to the peacetime treatment of psychiatric illness. But it caused a storm in Parliament and outrage in the press when they heard sections like these.
Essentials of the method. 1. Disorientation and disillusion by the use of conditions of partial sensory deprivation. Hypnotism can produce a temporary loss of function. Small amounts of drugs will produce hallucinatory experiences, especially if sounds and unstructured visual stimuli. This accelerates the process of destruction of personal identity.
Within 24 hours, The Observer was reporting
spies brainwashed in Britain. A technique of brainwashing was developed in Britain during the war and used to extract confessions from captured spies. This has been revealed by Dr. Alexander Kennedy, Professor of...
So, was The Observer right? Were British interrogators really using brainwashing techniques during World War II in Britain? Well, there's no evidence in Kennedy's lecture to support that claim. In his speech, he refers to methods used by Russian interrogators and others used during the Spanish Inquisition. And Kennedy himself utterly refuted The Observer's claims.
I have looked at the script used by me at my discourse at the Royal Institution and can give you full assurance that at no point in the script or in the discourse itself did I make any reference to Britain or to any sort of interrogation or brainwashing activities carried out there. As there were about 400 people present, it would not be difficult to obtain confirmation of this. My references to brainwashing were entirely general and no government was referred to.
He goes on.
I was naturally annoyed when I saw the headline in The Observer, but I realised that no good is ever done by complaining about inaccuracies in newspapers, so I took no action. My comments have been grossly distorted and exaggerated by the press. Yours faithfully, Alex Kennedy.
Within 3 months of writing those words, Kennedy, then 51, was dead. It would seem the world had lost a highly respected, prize-winning expert in psychological medicine. A former paratrooper in World War II, this Washington-trained fellow of the College of Physicians was described by peers as a delightful colleague who was full of energy. But Kennedy's denial didn't curb the growing storm of controversy following The Observer's article. Within the week, questions were being asked in Parliament, and the government lost no time in coming to the professor's aid. On March the 9th, Secretary of State for War Christopher Soames faced the first of several questions in the House.
What use was made by the army of brainwashing techniques on prisoners during the last war?
The army has never made use of the techniques described by Professor Kennedy.
Then, on March the 16th,
can the minister give a categorical assurance that the techniques described by Professor Kennedy in his recent lecture were never used by the RAF anywhere in the world during the recent war?
Certainly I can give that categorical assurance.
And finally, at Prime Minister's question time on the 17th of March, Harold Macmillan himself is called to account.
What use has been made by any government department during the last 20 years of the psychological technique of inducing in prisoners disintegration of personality, followed by emotional attachment to an interrogator, the process commonly known as brainwashing, for the purpose of obtaining confessions from prisoners or influencing their future conduct?
And Macmillan replies,
the techniques to which these questions refer have never been used by any organisation responsible to Her Majesty's government.
And as if that denial isn't unequivocal enough, Harold Macmillan goes on to slam the door on any further doubts, stating,
"On behalf of the government of this country, of whatever party, and of the whole people, that we have not, never did, and never would indulge in practices of this kind."
But I'm holding a document that suggests otherwise. It's a letter written by MP Francis Noel Baker to Prime Minister Harold Macmillan. This is what it says.
"It is within my own personal knowledge, and that of people with whom I served during the war, that a technique of brainwashing certainly was used by Major Kennedy, as he then was, and other interrogators at the Combined Services Detailed Interrogation Centre outside Cairo during the last war."
So, if this letter is to be believed, such methods were being used by the British. Not in Britain, as the Observer claimed, but in Cairo. And moreover, it seems Professor Kennedy was using them himself. This, despite his and the Prime Minister's emphatic denials. In the hope that Mr. Noel Baker, the MP who wrote that letter, might be able to tell me more, I'm going to try and find him. In the meantime, I need to take another look at the professor's lecture.
Essentials of the method. 1.
What exactly were the techniques he describes, and how much suffering are they likely to have caused? Dominic Stretfield is an expert on the subject of brainwashing.
He mentions hypnosis, he talks about sensory deprivation, he's talking about interfering with people's dreams, he's talking about dosing people with drugs, he's talking about placing people under intolerable stress over long periods of time to induce psychotic states.
"This accelerates the process of destruction of personal identity."
Basically what you would do is put goggles on them, put earmuffs on them, put some kind of gloves over their hands so they couldn't feel anything. You'd then lock them into a black room and play white noise, so they couldn't see anything, they couldn't hear anything, they couldn't feel anything. There's no light, there's no indication of where they are, what they're doing, and they become extremely confused, extremely quickly. They start hallucinating, they start seeing things, they start hearing things.
Essentials of the method.
And the anchors that hold them to reality seem to get cast away.
So, what would the long-term effects of such methods be? I asked Dr. David Harper, reader in psychology at the University of East London, to look through Professor Kennedy's lecture.
It's pretty horrific, really. I mean, we do have testimony from people who've had those kind of experiences, as there is survivors of torture or some of the people involved in experiments done by psychologists and psychiatrists in the 50s and 60s. And we know it's a very terrifying thing. It's extremely anxiety provoking. And, you know, people do continue to receive psychiatric medication. A lot of the psychological techniques can have just as damaging consequences as the physical techniques.
You mentioned the word torture just now. Is this really the same as torture? Can you put it in that category?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, these kind of techniques definitely match that standard, really. They do induce psychological, emotional pain and emotional psychological suffering as well.
As we know, Kennedy never admits that he used any of the techniques mentioned in his lecture. But Dominic Stretfield says such precise knowledge would be hard to gain without hands-on experience.
He talks about detailed interrogation. 4 times in the paper he says detailed interrogation. Now, in the literature of the time, this is a term that doesn't exist. So why detailed interrogation? It just so happens that the British Intelligence Service and Joint Forces interrogation centres during World War II were known as the Combined Services Detailed Interrogation Centres. So Kennedy is using the exact term that was in use during World War II. Where does he get this phrase from?
And there are further indications that suggest Kennedy had more intimate knowledge of certain methods than he was letting on.
Specifically, amphetamines and thyroxine. At the time, there was nothing in print about the use of certain drugs in interrogation. Indications that the CIA had been playing around with amphetamines and thyroxine didn't emerge until 15 years after Kennedy's lecture. So where did he get this information from?
I managed to track down Francis Noel Baker, the MP who said in that letter to Harold Macmillan that he had personal knowledge of Professor Kennedy using brainwashing techniques. Given that Mr. Noel Baker was very elderly and had been living in Greece since retiring from Parliament,
I made plans to fly to Athens. But sadly, he died a few days before I was able to make that trip. I have since managed to trace his son, Philip, who also lives in Greece. He agreed to be interviewed over the telephone. I asked him if he knew whether his father had received a response from Harold Macmillan all those years ago.
I don't know. We've actually looked through my father's archive to see if we could find such a reply, but I haven't found anything. There must have been a reply of some sort. I mean, if he'd written to Macmillan and didn't get a reply, he would have chased it. He wouldn't have let it go. I can't think of it. Hang on, I've just actually got a copy of his book in front of me. I'll look in the index. Kennedy. Oh, hang on. Lieutenant Colonel Professor Alex, is that the one?
Yes.
Advisor on psychiatry to the Intelligence Service, Middle East. It's under my nose. 44 to 50. Oh, I didn't know anything of that before. My friend Alex was always an enterprising person, and he found me just...
This chance find from a book of memoirs only circulated within the Noel Baker family confirmed that Kennedy and Francis Noel Baker had been good friends during the war.
Major, later Professor Alex Kennedy, the advisor in psychiatry to the Intelligence Services, APIS, an expert in interrogation techniques for captured spies and the testing of prospective British spies and saboteurs.
So if anybody would know what Major Kennedy was up to, it would have been your father.
I think one can draw that conclusion. I think there's... I mean, I hadn't actually read this. It certainly backs up the reason for the letter. You know, the circumstantial evidence is certainly very strong, and, you know, he had personal reason to know something more than any other MP, I suppose.
But I still don't have any detailed information on the nature of Kennedy's operation, who he was interrogating. But I've managed to track down John Oswald, a veteran interrogator from the Combined Services Detailed Interrogation Centre in Cairo, known as SISDIC.
It was a fairly big, sprawling camp. It was all military bungalows. There were, I think, two or even three big prisoner of war enclosures. And as they were interrogated by us, they were moved from one to the other so that there could be no sort of talk amongst themselves about what had been happening.
But John Oswald's testimony doesn't seem to square with what I've heard about Major Kennedy and the brainwashing techniques he's said to have used.
My technique was to get to know the chap, get to talk nicely to him, to become a friend, virtually, to him. And as soon as he showed signs of friendliness, it was easy to get any information that I wanted to get out of him. And, I mean, this is what I had been taught to do during our intelligence corps training. The big thing was that if you're trying to bully the chap you're interrogating, he's not going to be cooperative. He'll tell you anything just to shut you up.
You've said that you tried to get information by being pleasant, by being a friend to these particular soldiers. But did you ever resort to things like sleep deprivation, drug-induced hypnosis, sensory deprivation, disorientating, that sort of thing?
I didn't really have any possibility of doing that.
Were such things banned there?
Yes.
They were banned?
Yes.
Were you aware that at that time some other interrogation officers, British interrogation officers, were using techniques of that sort?
No. As far as I know, there was nothing underhand being done at SISDIC Cairo.
Well, we're looking into the activities of a man called Alexander Kennedy. Now, was there a man called Alexander Kennedy, Major Kennedy, working at SISDIC while you were there?
Not that I know of, unless he was using a different name. I didn't know anybody called Kennedy out there.
But it was quite a big place, wasn't it? And there were officers there. Is it possible perhaps you just didn't get to meet him?
I would have remembered the name. I was asked to do a paper on my intelligence corps career, and I was asked to put down the names of all officers that I could remember, and I produced a list of over 90 officers that I had met, and I am absolutely certain there was nobody called Kennedy amongst them.
John Oswald seemed to have a very clear recollection of his time in Cairo, and I don't doubt him when he said he had no recollection of Major Kennedy. So I need to find someone with detailed knowledge of the wider intelligence community in Cairo during the war. Dr. Simon Ball, head of history at Glasgow University, has proved to be just the person I was looking for. He's managed to find a reference to Kennedy, which could provide me with unprecedented detail on the man and his methods.
I was looking at these documents for completely different reasons. I was interested in how the British controlled the Mediterranean politically, and it was only when you asked me, have you heard of someone called Kennedy? Does he turn up in the documents? That I went and had a look at the documents again, and lo and behold, there is Major Kennedy. I suppose we got lucky here.
And was this at SISDIC in Cairo?
No, Kennedy doesn't work for SISDIC. He works for an organisation called SIME, which is called Security Intelligence Middle East. And the document says that he is the psychological advisor to SIME.
What does it say about what he was up to in Cairo?
It's a report written by an MI5 officer called Dick White. And White is sent out to Cairo at the beginning of 1943 to do an overall look at British security intelligence in the Middle East and the Mediterranean. While he's there, a German agent is arrested and he is interrogated by Kennedy and his people. So that's where Major Kennedy comes up.
I have a copy of that report, and there's no disguising the disdain with which Kennedy's activities are regarded by its author, MI5's Dick White.
There being no proper facilities for this man's interrogation, he was kidnapped and hidden in a villa belonging to Syme in Cairo. While there, his interrogation was guided largely by Major Kennedy, the psychological advisor to Syme. Among other methods employed by Kennedy, certain drugs were used to induce Hagger to confess. As might have been expected, the only result was that Hagger became mulish and indifferent to his fate, and contracted pneumonia. With this example before me, I suggested to all the officers concerned that this was not the best way to interrogate a spy. I pointed out the necessity for method and discipline in the work of interrogation.
He thought they were ineffective. He thought that essentially what they did was they turned the suspect into a non-talker. He uses the word mulish. It only gets a partial confession, and essentially what White is saying is this is absolutely the wrong way to go about things, particularly the kind of truth drug techniques that Kennedy seems to be using.
So how confident are we that there weren't more Kennedys running around doing perhaps even more brutal programs on prisoners?
We're not confident at all. We're probably just scratching the surface. These kind of documents have only been surfacing for the past, you know, sort of 5 to 10 years. Kennedy is lost from sight. I mean, this is a snapshot that we get. It becomes clear from other documents that the attempt to move over to a more scientific form of interrogation in Cairo wasn't entirely successful. And as far as we can tell, Kennedy wasn't one of the great cooperators. And so we have a later report saying we haven't been that successful at making these interrogation methods that scientific.
But what of Kennedy's victims? What effect did his methods have on them? Simon Ball's discovery led me to find the original interrogation report on the spy Eli Hagger, codenamed Gull, an Egyptian who'd been recruited by German military intelligence. One would hardly expect a Nazi spy to be treated with kid gloves during wartime, but the dossier makes clear they achieved nothing.
I'm afraid that the report must be regarded as somewhat disappointing. The upshot of it is, in effect, that the Gull case will have to be regarded to some extent as unsolved, and perhaps an insoluble mystery.
Hagger was dead within a few months. Whether or not he died of the pneumonia he contracted as a result of Kennedy's interrogations isn't known. Because of the secret nature of Kennedy's work, we don't know if other interrogations he was involved with were more successful. There's also no reason to dispute the assumption that he worked, as he saw it, in the best interests of his country. But our documents prove that Kennedy was using drugs, hypnosis and sleep deprivation during his interrogation of prisoners. Exactly the same methods he'd outlined in his 1960 lecture, and which he'd been at pains to distance himself from. And remember, he wasn't the only one to deny it. What of Macmillan's statement in Parliament that Kennedy's techniques
have never been used by any organisation responsible to Her Majesty's government?
Well, I suppose he's playing with responsible to Her Majesty's government. It's not entirely clear to whom Syme answer, so I think he's probably equivocating.
So you believe then that Macmillan did deliberately mislead Parliament when asked that question?
I don't believe he deliberately misled Parliament. I think he was very, very careful as a very skilled parliamentarian in playing the game.
But Macmillan's denials went beyond a game of semantics. The Prime Minister had later gone on to state emphatically,
"On behalf of the government of this country, of whatever party and of the whole people, that we have not, never did, and never would indulge in practices of this kind."
I took Macmillan's denials to Colonel John Hughes Wilson, himself a senior interrogator in the British intelligence services in the 1970s. He is far less charitable about Macmillan's intentions.
"Well, I think if we want to be brutally honest, I think Macmillan was seeking to deceive. In fact, to use unparliamentary language, he was telling lies."
Colonel Hughes Wilson believes the Prime Minister was in a position to have known what had been going on.
"I'd be very surprised if a minister of any stamp were to stand up and talk on intelligence matters without whistling for the head of that service and saying, 'What's going on? Draft me an answer.'"
Particularly when the head of that service, MI6, was Dick White, the very person who had compiled that highly critical report on Alexander Kennedy. We'll never know for sure what conversations took place 17 years later between the Prime Minister and his head of intelligence, but Macmillan was clearly under strong pressure to make his denials.
This has become a problem for Britain by 1960. There are two problems that they're dealing with. One, in the summer of 1959, there had been government reports about the use of interrogation methods in Kenya against Mau Mau suspects. And another report had said that Nyasaland, what is now Malawi, had been turning into a police state. So Macmillan has had to deal with these accusations of interrogation methods in the imperial context. So he really just wants to close this stuff down.
The political fallout is one thing. But here was Kennedy, a doctor, using brainwashing techniques on prisoners of war. I asked psychologist Dr. David Harper for his reaction to the methods highlighted in the Dick White report.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a pretty horrific kind of torture. I mean, I find it really amazing that somebody who's taken the Hippocratic Oath, who should be there to help people, is involved in directly administering drugs, presumably against their will, and not only coming in and checking on their care, but actually advising on interrogation and designing the interrogation regime. I mean, I do find that surprising.
But given that at the time the Second World War was happening, is this really so terrible, given the importance of that war being won and the atrocities being committed constantly throughout it by both sides?
Well, I think it's always a slippery slope when you get into these debates. I mean, you know, one of the reasons that the Allies, the end of the Second World War, had the Nuremberg Tribunal was to say these are the moral standards that we should be aiming for, and these are the standards that by which we should judge ourselves and our own actions, and it's why we shouldn't be involved in torture. People who were supporting their own country want to think that we're better than the other side.
But Colonel John Hughes Wilson takes a different view.
We tend to be a bit prissy today about what actually went on. Let's face it, 60 years ago, and some of the methods used in the Second World War by all sides were anything but consistent with nice liberal democracy. The other point to remember is Kennedy is not talking about interrogation as such. He's talking primarily about conditioning the subject to be questioned until maybe 24 to 72 hours in that, people are so disoriented that when they're confronted with a cup of tea and a cigarette and a nice, gentle questioner, they'll spill their hearts. And that's the conditioning process.
But the long shadow cast by Professor Kennedy's work extends beyond the war years. Over the following decades, the methods he used were honed and sharpened and would once again become a source of scandal.
Mr. Curry, the Secretary of Defence, Lord Carrington, says that most of the men interrogated are thugs and murderers. Do you deny this?
Well, I think this is a terrible thing for someone.
This time, during the period of internment in Northern Ireland in the early 1970s.
Ministers decided to send in interrogators, professional interrogators, to interrogate those who'd been interned. Many of the techniques used in Northern Ireland would have been quite recognisable from the Kennedy paper.
The hooding of men, noise to disorientate people, deprivation of sleep, a diet of bread and water, and other allegations.
The bad news is, in many cases, a lot of the IRA detainees, some of whom never should have been detained, sang like canaries. And that, in a nutshell, is the problem. In many cases, these harsh and nowadays unacceptable methods were highly successful.
I mean, there's no doubt about it that as a result of this questioning, an enormous amount of information was got, and a lot of lives were saved.
Now we know that all those methods are completely illegal as far as Britain is concerned. Let us hope future enemies are as kind to us as our lawyers are to them.
Though unaware of Kennedy's methods until now, veteran interrogator John Oswald served in Cairo at the same time as the professor. He firmly believes that the ends must never be allowed to justify the means.
I feel very surprised, because throughout my training it was drilled into me that the prisoner was just a member of the opposing forces, and he's in it for the same reason that we're in it, and he's got to be treated that way. I suppose there will always be people who are bullies, but I'm just not that way inclined. I mean, these things that went on in Iraq have horrified me, really. That, you know, the way they treated these Iraqis is quite horrific.
So even back then they would have disapproved of doing such things?
I think so, yes. Amongst my colleagues, I don't think of any of them who would have used those methods. I just feel that it's wrong to treat people that way.
Document was presented by Mike Thompson. The readers were Bruce Alexander, Nigel Hastings and Ewan Hooper. And the producer was Lawrence Grizel. Next week, Mike's paper chase leads him to allegations of British-sponsored coup in the oil-rich state of Oman in the 1970s.